Hello, and welcome to the School of Attraction podcast. I'm Damien Deeker, and I'll be talking to you about a range of topics from dating, attraction, masculinity, sexuality, life philosophy, and much, much more. So, without any further ado, let's get started. I hope you enjoy listening to today's podcast just as much as I've enjoyed creating it. Hey, welcome back, everyone. Today is another interesting one. Those of you who have been listening a lot recently would have heard about a month ago my interview with Dave Buda, which was really interesting. I recommend you go check that out. But at the end of my interview, I asked Dave, you know, I'm really interested in dealing with men's sexuality and men's the shame that guys have around sexuality and delving into what is masculinity and how should that be brought into the sexual experience. And Dave said to me, Damien, there is a woman that you should speak with. Her name is Priestess Ava. And she is a tantra and kink teacher, and she works with male clients, and she's very hands-on with the workshop that she does, and I think she would be really fascinating to talk to, because I've spoken with her, that is, Dave's spoken with her, and had a great time, and he said that I should reach out, and I reached out, and I was very happy to hear that she wanted to talk to me. So here I have with me Priestess Ava. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, the first thing, I mean, what do you do exactly? Because, you know, tantra and kink instructor, teacher is interesting. Tantra and kink is not, I mean, I can see how they're linked, but they're not normally linked professionally. Tell me a little bit more about what you really do specifically.
It's true. Well, I started as a tantra teacher. So, over 10 years ago. So, and what that means to me is I was started with doing hands-on, one-on-one work with clients. And in the beginning, you know, it was a lot of teaching people how to breathe and doing sensual massage and teaching, you know, the basics of, you know, becoming a more sensual person, being able to cultivate more intimacy and have bigger orgasms. So I did that for many years. And, you know, in that role, I would come across all kinds of things and, you know, often find myself sort of in the role as a coach, a sex therapist, in those scenarios. Yeah, I was had the thought of wondering if I could be a dom, but I wasn't sure if I was quite cut out for it because I, you know, I'm very egalitarian and I'm very kind and very nice. but I started to experiment and I started to explore different aspects of kink with my friends and lovers, and eventually felt comfortable enough to bring it, you know, into the session room. And so now I still do work with tantra clients, but by and large, I work with people who are looking to interface with a professional dominatrix or dom, and working with all kinds of different kinks, fetishes, shadows, all kinds of things.
Cool. And I think I want to talk about this, you deciding, wondering if you could get into being dom, getting into that world, but I'll come back to that later. The first question I want to say is, when men decide to come and see you, what's driving them? Have they come to see you and like, you know what, I want to see a woman who's experienced as a dominatrix to work with me, or is it more subtle the way that they approach you?
It really comes in all flavors. Some come with a very specific problem or issue or, you know, concern of like, oh my gosh, I realize I've had, you know, a foot fetish. What do I do? Others really are craving, like, I kind of want to be polyamorous. You seem like you know things about that. You know, others are well established in that they know they like the presence of a dominant woman. And when I'm, you know, I have a few specialties, but one of them is particularly helping men explore kind of bisexual feelings that they've been having.
Right, which is an interesting one all unto itself. Do men have some... Do men come to you with some shame around being interested in a dominant woman? I ask because, you know, myself, I've learned that I love both full power and lack of power in a sexual, like, I like both ends of the spectrum can be quite exciting to me. But I know that bringing up with a partner that sometimes I really turned on by a woman who's really dominant, I can feel some sense of shame. I don't even know if that's the right word, but trepidation about having that conversation. Do you notice that men bring that to the table a lot when they're interacting with you?
Some do. I mean, if you think about it, a lot of our fetishes and desires come because something feels taboo. And because we live in a patriarchal society, you know, men are supposed to be the powerful, strong ones. And so, you know, the worst thing a man could be is like a sucker who loses all his money to a woman, or it just, you know, a lap dog or whatever. And so it's very taboo for some men to submit to a woman. And so that is fully based in, you know, a weird shame spiral. But, you know, obviously as things evolve and we have a little bit more equality going on, it's not so much taboo for everyone anymore. So it really just depends on the individual.
And how about when, so you know, they've mentioned they're you know, looking for a dominant woman, and you mentioned that some of the kinks start to come forward. Because I'm interested in kinks. I mean, I have a core belief that actually having some kind of kink is the norm, and having no kinks at all is probably less normal than most people realize.
I would tell
you. And no one wants to talk about the kinks because the kinks are dirty and disgusting. I mean, I say that in inverted commas because, you know, that's really unkind, but that's how we feel about it as a society.
Yeah.
Do you share that belief, you know, being in this line of work, do you agree with that notion?
What was the notion again?
The notion was that, you know, it's actually probably more normal to be walking around with kinks than to not be walking, than to be pretty vanilla.
1,000%. I mean, people don't realize like how closely, you know, our psyche and our sexual energy are related. So it's very, very easy to develop a kink or a fetish. Now, technically, when it becomes a fetish, it's something you absolutely need in order to become aroused or complete an orgasm. And so that's specific, and that does happen to some people, but most people have more of what I would say is kinks. So it's like, it's something that would aid in their arousal, but they don't necessarily require it. And people are walking around with all kinds of them, you know, whether it is that you happen to, you know, watch, Wonder Woman cartoon when you were younger and you saw that bondage and you're like, you know, you got a little tingly feeling inside. But like anything, somebody could have called you a pet name once while you were aroused, and it just like landed in your body in a way. And you were like, wow. So, you know, we pick them up really easily. There's nothing to be ashamed about.
Yeah. Well, there shouldn't be. And that's often the difficulty, I think. Is part of your role helping guys to share those kinks? I mean, as a guy, so I'll share my own thing, because I think I often assume most men are somewhat like me. You know, I used to like to think that I was very special, but I've learned that actually I'm probably quite normal. But
good for you.
What I know from my own world right now, for example, is that I am dead certain there's more kink inside than I've really explored properly for myself. And I'm not even 100% sure where that lies. I just know that it needs to be explored. Do you, when you're working with men, do you come across men that are in that space where they want to explore their kinky side, but they really don't even know how that's done or how to communicate that to you? Is that something that you come up?
Yes, definitely. Especially now more, I've been doing a good amount of phone work and phone sessions since this pandemic situation. Mm. And, you know, some men call up right away and they're like, hey, I'm into this and this and this. And others are like, so yeah, I think I'm kinky and I want to explore. And, you know, and usually with that, I start to explain to them some of the things I'm into, or we talk about my sex life for a little bit, and they, you know, I ask them like, okay, did anything light you up in the last, you know, 5 minutes of things we talked about? Like, you know, and there's a lot of different ways to explore it, but more than anything, in my life, I would say, you know, BDSM and kink is something, especially if you get into role play and power exchange, that just keeps blossoming. You know, like there's things that I'm into now that I would have never had a clue about 5 years ago.
I have an innate sense. As I said, I haven't properly explored my own kink yet, but I have this innate sense that doing so will make me happier fundamentally, not just because I'm getting different sexual needs met or wants met, but I feel like it's going to enable me to access parts of myself or to, I don't know, this. I feel like there is catharsis in it.
I think that's very true. With a caveat, like when, for example, so I identify as a switch. you know, and I would say that most, you know, in my professional life, I predominantly am a dom, and in my personal life, I'm predominantly a sub. Now that's not strictly so. There are some exceptions, but that's how it falls mostly. And, you know, I started off exploring my submissive side before I really owned my dominant side. And as I explored that and I found like the safety, like there was such a safety and acceptance for that, like the needy little girl in me that just wants to be like held and pet and adored, that, you know, like literally no amounts of therapy, no ayahuasca ceremony could really touch in the same way of like live action role play of that part of me. And so extremely cathartic, extremely comforting. And to be honest, you know, if you're not careful, a little bit addicting. You have to be careful. You can go too far. You can be in that role too much and lose other parts of yourself if you aren't working with skilled people. So yes, and there are people where it's less about a role and it does become more about a fetish. And for the extreme fetishist, often it's less emotional, but they have to keep sort of upping the ante to get the same result. You know, it can't just be like, oh, I like spankings. Well, it's like, now I need, you know, a gangbang of 20 people lined up to spank me, you know, like, so it really depends. But by and large, I've found it in my life to be extremely growthful and cathartic in ways.
I think that, I mean, do you see that as being the same as addiction? I mean, because when I was working as a dating coach, I would see that. I would see guys who, you know, would go out and approach women and, you know, talk to women. And most guys would find that incredibly healthy experience. But some would become addicted to talking to, picking up and having sex with women, as opposed to, I don't know, there's a healthy version and there's an unhealthy version where it's, I guess it's like addiction. It's like turning to drugs or alcohol, but someone might turn to their kink. Is that what the experience is? Am I making that assumption right?
Just like anything, it's like kink can be used in a healthy way and it can be used in a compulsive way. And so I can't say that it by and large is an addictive thing. It's not for many people. There's millions of people across the world practicing kink and BDSM in very healthy, responsible, measured ways. And there are some people that are doing it in very compulsive ways.
Yeah. Well, actually, I wasn't meaning to say that kink in general became addictive. I actually meant that some people, they cross an addiction threshold. It's like you're going to be addicted to something and it could end up being kink, or it could be drugs, or it could be alcohol, it could be anything else. It's that same addictive.
Yeah, that's fair. You know, and, you know, I was in a course not too long ago, a course for financial DOMs, and we were talking a lot about how to spot, you know, sort of like compulsive gambler people and like that are really in an addiction loop around money and how to like avoid them as clients, basically.
I was going to ask a different question. I'm going to ask this one now then. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's related to what you just said, but you know, when people get awkward or when their shame gets tapped, people have very different ways of responding.
Yeah.
You know, I know especially men, if shame gets touched, can easily switch to aggression, mm-hmm. you know, which is, it's almost like your stereotypical, you know, homophobic man who is secretly gay or you know, gay, interested, curious, and then becomes hyper aggressive whenever that topic comes up.
Right.
You know, when shame gets touched. You must have had some men who have not necessarily scarily lashed out, but lashed out because, you know, you're playing with a form of fire, I suppose, where there's shame that they have around it that has nothing to do with you, but still shame based. How have you helped those men deal or grapple with that shame or those reactions, that sort of toxic anger or embarrassment that turns to anger around the shame?
Right. Well, fortunately, even, you know, I've worked with hundreds and hundreds of people over, I guess probably thousands over 10 years, and I haven't had anybody lash out with me in anger or violence at all. But I screen my clients very thoroughly. I will say, though, that I've had, you know, a lot of men talk about, you know, where I'm, whether it's in, you know, I also do psychedelic therapy, but it's been present in that. And even in a regular Tantra session or BDSM session, where there's this, where I'm trying to get them to relax their nervous system completely or to trust themselves fully. And they hit this wall where they're like, if I really let go, if I really trust, if I really relax, then like this wild, uncontrollable creature is going to come out and I don't trust it. And, you know, all I can do with them at that point is I'm like, you know, we'll try it, you know? And, you know, obviously you can't do that in all situations with all people, but, it's mostly in men's mind that there's this monster that's going to come out if they totally let go. And in my experience, that's just not the case. You know, the most extreme I've had to help somebody with that is like, you know, just letting them scream and pound into a pillow as they like let that sort of big wave of rage come through their bodies. So it's definitely a thing that I find, you know, a lot, especially really good, kind men who are just trying so hard to do it right. And they just, but they carry so much shame in them and they're scared, you know, and it's a combination of just like that primal humanity. And I think, you know, the patriarchy has really just screwed you guys over in a way. There's this fear that that hyper aggression is going to come through you, even if you don't want it to. And in my experience, that hasn't been the case.
There is a lot of fear with guys around it. Yeah. And it's interesting. It comes up for me. I do an exercise with men. One of the exercises that I do is I first get them to meditate and become very present with their bodies, focus on breathing, because presence is an important part of the process. And the first thing I get them to do is I get them to identify with a moment when they felt extreme rage, the type of rage where they were capable of doing serious harm to a person.
Yeah.
And then I get them to hold the feeling and let go of the memory. And then I get them to picture the last time they saw a woman that really turned them on.
Mm-hmm.
And what would it feel like to be in front of that woman with that same space feeling? And what a lot of the men experience is that it's not rage. Like they don't feel the desire to hurt her. They feel the desire to ravish her. Like it's interesting because from the men's experience, it feels like it comes from the same darkness almost. I mentioned this because you talked about, you know, getting angry and beating a pillow and letting out some of that rage. And I was explaining this to a friend last week. I was at a dinner party and I was having a one-on-one with a female friend talking about this. And she was sort of very open about this, but asking me, so you saying that men should have rage when they're having sex? And I said, no, it's not it. It's like it taps into something dark. And I realized that while I, at a deep level, I grokked, I fundamentally understood this as a man, I couldn't explain this very well. And I'm hoping that maybe you can explain it back to me, how you see that manifesting, because as a man, I know that the two are linked somehow, but it isn't 100% clear other than to say they both come from our darkness.
Yeah. I mean, I think to really understand that we would have to break down the total psychology of patriarchy and how much damage it did to men and their psyches around, you know, aggression, attraction, the taking of things, you know, the protecting of things. There's a lot in there. But I'd say that the good news based on your experiment and my work too, is that that energy of ravishment, that's something that a lot of women want and aren't getting. So, you know, there's a lot to be explored in that territory. But first you have to, you know, men have to really come to a place of trusting themselves.
Yeah, that comes up a lot. You know, when I do this exercise with men and afterwards I bring them present again, and I'll say, how did that make you feel? And some men say, I felt, wow, that was wow. And other men will say, it felt good, but I was very frightened because I was worried about what I would do to the girl.
Yeah.
You know, you're right. There's a lot of trepidation around that. that just releasing that part of yourself. But what's interesting, though, is that even when they're frightened, they can feel that that part of themselves, I call it the wild man, is just scratching to get out. Like, it's like he's in a cage and wants out. They're just frightened to let him out. But boy, does it feel good when you do. Far out. It's so liberating. It's like a form of freedom you didn't even know you needed so badly until.
It's amazing. And now you just need the communication skills to communicate with a woman in your life, or find a woman that wants to sort of like have some play experiment labs where, you know, you're not exactly sure what's going to happen when you get into that state, but you want to try it out, and she's game.
How would you advise men to have that conversation with it? Because one thing I noticed, I think not just men, I think most people in general are pretty poor at sexual communication. I think that's a really lacking thing in most relationships, which for means sure. most people end up with lackluster sex because they just don't communicate what they want, which is part of why you have a job. So, you know, it's, but how, I mean, if you know, you're talking to my guys that are listening to this, you know, and some of them may have either long-term partners or casual partners, but they have sexual partners. How would you advise them to communicate or to start opening that door? To talk about what they want and maybe what their partner wants, and if there's opportunity to share kinks or to experiment together.
Well, in my experience, you know, when things are really scary to say and there's never a right moment to say it, the first layer is to like set up a time and structure to talk about difficult things. So, you know, maybe if they're coaching with you, they're already ahead of the game and they maybe have a weekly check-in with their partner about things. I don't know. But then you add in the like, hey, let's talk about our sex life. And it just try to figure out a structure, a meeting, a something of regularity that's just dedicated to talking about that. So that you don't have to like tiptoe or think it's the wrong time or whatever, that, you know, there's a sacred space for that experimentation, that exploration, because again, also men are so performance anxiety ridden around sex. And so they'll get an idea of something they want to try, or maybe they've even picked up on clues that their woman does want. Maybe they picked up on clues that their woman wants to try out rough sex or bondage. And so they think that they have to like show up on day one and be like the perfect movie star version of that scene. And that's just not realistic for anybody. And like the chances of things going wrong when you're trying to do it perfect without any communication are extremely high. So, you know, take a nod from our friends in the BDSM community. They have endless amounts of checklists on like, thing, like it's like usually has a endless list of like kinks, fetishes, things to try. And then it's like, you know, there's like a, I'm sort of curious. I'm curious, but scared. I definitely want to do that. I might want to do that in 6 months, or I never want to do that. You know, so you could even like bring one of those checklists into your conversation and just look at it together. You know, it, you have to find a way to open the conversation. And then, you know, if you guys do want to try something that's sort of edgy for both of you, you go into it together knowing like, hey, we're going to have to communicate and work out the kinks to make sure this works for us both. It's not going to come out perfect the first time.
I really love the idea of a checklist. I mean, I know on paper it sounds a little bit cold, but I actually really love the idea because I mean, you know, like, I guess what I picture is I almost picture having checklists and you kind of walk away, fill in your own checklist and then send it to each other.
Exactly. No, I mean, there are thousands of these on the internet. You were like three clicks away from the million checklists.
I'm going to be clicking after this talk. I'm going to be clicking in because it's like, you know, with online dating, everyone feels more daring to say things they wouldn't normally say in real life.
Yeah.
Right? Be that good or bad. But the checklist is the same thing, right? It's much easier to breach something or to kind of tick a box than it is to have a conversation and say, hey, so I'm interested in feet. You know what I mean? Like that can feel so confronting, whereas like ticking a box and then sending it through is much emotionally easier on the soul.
Yeah, yeah.
As a baby step. I love that.
Yeah.
I really like that idea, actually. I think I'm gonna try it myself and just see what that looks like, and then I'm gonna start recommending that to clients, because this kind of thing comes up quite a bit, you know. And I think sexual communication is how you get good in bed.
I mean, people in the BDSM community, whether you're just the average person who practices, or you're professional, we use these checklists too, also to kind of gauge, where somebody's hard limits are, where their hell yeses are, and where is the like edgy area in between that we can flirt and play with. And that's really important for people to understand that there's like a range. And just because, just because you say yes to maybe getting tied up and spanked, you could say, okay, I want all that, but like, don't ever, spank me on my back or my feet, and like, don't ever, you even in like a whole realm of hell yes, you can have some very strict no's. So that's what makes the safety in it.
Yeah, I know it was interesting. There's a place in Sydney, like a club, like a nightclub. Mm-hmm. And it's called Hellfire, and it's kind of a BDSM based club. And I went along with a friend who was really getting into BDSM, and it was amazing because the energy was so non-judgmental and so open, and so it was really hard to explain without being there, but it was a really great energy. It was like a bunch of people I guess it's what it looks like if you have people who aren't trying to have hang-ups around sex and sexuality, and so everyone was expressing themselves in very wildly unique ways. But it felt good. It felt really healthy.
Yeah. I mean, not every BDSM community is the same, but the ones that I've interacted with, they really come from a place of non-judgment, because like, how can I judge you? Like, over there, there's a guy who's into wearing diapers. Over here is a guy who's into, medical play. And over here is, a couple in a sex swing. It's like, it really is this universe of like, find what you like and do it, and let us watch.
Oh, why shouldn't sex be like? I mean, it's an interesting one. It's like we. But yes, I think I think even if you're not interested in BDSM, I think there's a lot to be said about just coming along and having a look at the community or being around it, because I think there's. I mean, I certainly gained a lot from it, and I'm not even sure really how much I am into BDSM, but I really love the experience regardless.
Yeah, I agree. It's a very much a worthy experiment, even if you're not sure, just to feel what true like sex positive community it looks like.
Yeah, you were saying something earlier, and I flagged it to ask about, but it's a pet thing of mine, right? Because I'm in the dating coaching industry, and
yeah,
of course, one of the things lots of men want to know about is how do I be really good in bed? It's all performance based, right? Like, mm-hmm. And there's a lot of YouTube videos out there, and the thing that drives me crazy, I'm almost 100% certain you'll agree with me, the thing that drives me wild is there's so much focus on like technique, like a specific technique, like here's a special type of hip thrust you should do this magical thing with your fingers, nibble her here, bite her there, and it irks me because in my experience, that is not what makes sex amazeballs.
Oh yeah.
It's really about this special tiny little technique that, first of all, there's no little technique that's going to work on every woman. Like what turns on one woman or the other is just, in my experience, completely different. Mm. Well, not completely, but often very different. To me, what always makes sex really work is, I guess, the psychology, like what's happening in my head, or the frame, or how the vibe that's being created, the energy in the moment, it's not even a role play, but there's always a role play, even if you're not role playing, in my experience. There's always even if that role is just I'm man and I'm ravishing you, well, that's the role play that's at hand, right?
Yeah.
Look, I've often believed that that's by far the biggest deal, and if you can successfully play each other's sexual brains like a musical instrument, that's where the amazing sex is, more so than the specific technique? I mean, is that something that, that resonates for you?
Oh, so deeply. I mean, literally even today, I was working with phone clients and he kept pressing for technique. And he was like, well, when you did that session with that person, well, like, what did you do? Or, you know, or if I have potential clients and they're like, well, what is it going to be like? And, you know, they want to know, like, literally, what are the techniques we're going to do? And it's extraordinarily frustrating to me, because it's just not about that. Like, if you want to really study a technique to get you far, then study emotional attunement, like study presence, study communication, learn how to relax your nervous system. You know, like these are the things that actually matter. You know, it's not to say that, you know, sure, I've had a guy who had better technique than other as a lover, but those aren't the thing. Like when it really comes down to it, it's like, who can meet my soul? Like who sees me? Who pays attention to nuance? You know, these are the things that are actually going to matter in the long run. Like if a guy is doing the best technique ever on, you know, oral sex on me, but he's not present, it, you know, actually this happened to me not too long ago. There was a guy who was going down on me and I could tell all he wanted to do in life was to make me come. That's all I cared about. And he really, really wanted me to come.
That's a lot of pressure.
A lot of pressure. And even though his technique was good, I became totally checked out and annoyed because I'm like, you're not with me. You're not in it. You're actually not even enjoying yourself because you're so focused on this goal and you're probably so focused on doing your technique perfectly that you forgot that I'm a human being here.
Yeah. It is. I mean, it's actually it's a thing that I hear about with my own sexual partners is how frustrating it can be with guys when they're obsessed with trying to make her come.
Oh yeah. It's, I mean, it's better than not caring, but it's pretty bad too.
Right. But I mean, especially the first time that you sleep with someone. It is harder for women. I mean, depending on the context of how, you know, but for a lot of women, that's a harder thing in the beginning. She has to feel comfortable enough to be able to let go enough.
Yeah.
And that's just not going to happen every time.
Yep.
No matter how good you are.
Exactly. you're going to go way higher up if you are focused on, you know, emotional connection and intimacy and listening to her hands, her body, her words, and not rushing to some glorious finale.
Yeah. Yeah. Stop trying to be a porn star is sometimes good advice.
Yeah.
But you know, sometimes be a porn star because sometimes that's what the moment calls for.
You know, though, just while we're talking about porn, porn is making some changes here and there. There is one filmmaker named Erica Lust who makes just exquisite, queer-friendly, beautiful porn. So check her out if you want to see, you know, an alternative version.
Yeah, I've just written a name down and we'll have a look. I know there's a lot of things being done with porn, actually. And they're trying to find how do we make porn healthier but still appealing to porn consumers, which is an interesting area, right? And how do we make porn more suited to women? Because now more and more than ever before, women are watching porn, right? And there's a whole interesting push to try to make porn that works for women.
Yes.
Hits the spot and they're trying different things. It's quite interesting to have a look, actually. I have had a look at that a little bit, but I will have a look at Erica Lust and check that out. If I were to go back to what we were talking about before, just to do with having kink and not knowing how to explore that for yourself, you know, so what would you say to a guy? Like, how would you best advise guys listening who say, I think I'm kinky. I think there's more to go in there. I don't even know what it is. And since I don't know what it is, it's not like I can talk to a sexual partner and say, hey, this is what I'm interested in.
Yeah.
How would you advise guys in that position to work it out?
Well, it's so simple. They just call me.
Okay, cool. I mean, that's an option, right? Fine. Like, give you a call. Like, that isn't a service you offer, right?
If I'm not available, I mean, it's read a book or go check out some of Erica Lust's porn. You know, like, you really kind of need to get a little bit get yourself a little bit out of the mainstream. And, you know, there's loads of books on BDSM and kink just that will, I mean, the vocabulary in itself, there are kinks that you have no idea exist right now. And so you don't even know, you don't know what you don't know. So like, explore and find somebody safe, you know, to talk to about it, who can give you some ideas, you know, like somebody who's experienced in BDSM and kink like myself, but there's many others. Like if you give me an idea of one or two things that you think you might be into, I can, you know, point you in the direction of some things to explore, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I suspect too, that I guess kind of what you said there is explore, but I have a suspicion too, not that I've tested it with clients yet, but I have a suspicion that finding someone, anyone, to try to talk to about what might turn you on, like literally just having a conversation about it,
yeah,
can just do oodles of good for working that out, because it's in the shadow, right? So when it lives in the shadow, it's really hard to suss out.
Yeah. I mean, one of the platforms I work on is called Night Flirt, and it's, you know, it's mostly phone sex oriented, but I wouldn't really call what I do phone sex, at least not majority of the time. Most of the time it's people calling me to talk about things, kinky things they're doing in their own life that they want to know. They just want to celebrate and or ask questions about. So there's lots of nooks and crannies in the internet of people to talk to. And, you know, like sex workers are really underutilized in this way. Like they are, you know, we are your sex positive advocates. We want you to live your kinkiest, sluttiest life possible. And, you know, we're here to support you in that. And, you know, it can be hard to talk about with your partner, especially if you're certain that they're not into certain things, but you know, it's important for your psyche and your growth as a human being not to suppress things, but to, you know, give them a little bit of room to explore.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned actually in the email when we were talking about what we were talking about, you actually mentioned too that you found that people working with what's the word, dominance, and I was going to say impassiveness, but I can't think of the what's the opposite to dominance, to submission. All right, that's the word I was struggling for. Brain's gone to sleep. But people working within the dominance and submission spectrum,
yeah,
end up learning a lot about their relationship. What did you say? The relationship to masculine and feminine. You were saying or something. I can't remember how you phrased it.
Well, I think we were talking about, you know, the healing possibility in certain role plays and power exchanges, and how, you know, for me, you know, and not just for me, but a lot of my clients, like, you know, most of us are carrying around a pretty core wound around our parents. You know, some of it's more of a daddy wound, some of it's more of a mommy wound. And so I have found that, you know, exploring, you know, these roles, you know, in a sensual or sexual way can actually really help you figure out some things. And, you know, obviously there, you know, it's not so much taboo anymore to call people daddy. That's mainstream. I saw a meme the other day. It was like, oh, daddy's the new anal. But like, for example, like I've done tons of daddy baby girl play and mommy baby boy play. And in the way that I do it, it's actually like doesn't relate at all to incest. It's more about a container of mutual adoration, where one person is, you know, holding the dominant role and one's more submissive. But it's just about like becoming really vulnerable, like letting somebody deeply hold you. You know, there's a lot of different versions of that. And then of course, you know, you can take it into incest role play, and that's interesting as well. But it's not even necessary if what you're doing is trying to heal that wound. It's more about, just letting yourself be in that idealized form. You know, like one of my clients, we realized, you know, his core wound is that his mother was not attuned to him and his needs. His mother was attuned to his brother's needs. And so, there's just a real gaping hole in his heart around, you know, because he never sensed that his needs were super important to his mother, like they weren't important to him either. So he became a very self-sacrificing individual, you know, and that's really, it caused a lot of pain for him.
I think it's really fascinating how sex or sexuality or sex or that spectrum still can play a role even into those really fundamental childhood experiences.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's something very powerful because, I mean, to some degree, sex is not just sex. It's a form of love.
Yes.
You know, it's tied so deeply to emotional connection and acceptance. And,
yeah.
You know, I think I'm aware, you know, for example, you know, like stepmom porn is ridiculously popular and things like this. There's different forms of incest porn is actually like inordinately popular on porn, I was gonna say on YouTube, on Pornhub and on all these sites.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people think, oh, that's disgusting. There must be all these men around wanting to sit with their moms or their stepmoms. But actually, I have long thought that it was more linked to, and it's you literally said it, and so this is why I'm rephrasing it back, but I've long thought that it was more likely to be linked to issues with mom and nothing to do with wanting to have sex with mom, but the, bringing sexuality in as a form of, I don't know, it's an avenue to start to deal with it and process it.
Yeah. Well, you know, and so BDSM as personal development or kink as a personal development tool is awesome for people that particularly like sex and that sexual energy makes them feel relaxed and expansive because it's like this sexual energy is sort of like the primer that allows you to drop into that more vulnerable state and then more like then deeper stuff can be accessed and explored, you know?
Mm.
Yeah. And it's funny, I'm giggling about the stepmommy thing. Cause so I've recently gotten into making, audio erotic products, like, you know, 5 or 10 minute fantasies. And I have a couple of niches that I do. And, you know, because I'm sort of a nurturing dom, I do some mommy dom stuff. But so many of the platforms, because the powers that be are trying to, you know, sanitize the internet and kick all sex workers off, in the name of saving the children, which is a whole other topic, but but it's some of the platforms won't let me do mommy dom content, but they'll let me do stepmommy content, which to me makes it weirder. Like it brings it into reality more, where it is like kinkier, and it's just bizarre. I'm like, okay, all right, you want me to do the kinkier version of this? Okay.
But I think that is a perfect example of how, like, our society is so sensitive around sex.
Yeah.
And it's dangerous because if you suppress a thing, you make it worse.
Oh,
you don't fix it.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like racism in America, you know, like you suppress racism, you don't fix it. Well, you don't fix the problem. You just suppress it and then it just festers.
And then it comes up in all of these unexpected ways. And
right.
So it's like, you might be like, hey, you know, I mean, I'm a family man or I'm a businessman. I need to focus on that. And I'm just going to suppress all these sexual desires. Well, that's good. And you might feel like strong and resolute in the moment, but look at your life in 5 to 10 years. And, you know, there'll be problems popping up, whether it's, you know, addiction, depression, anxiety, you know, relationship breakups, you know, like you can't just suppress stuff. We don't work. I mean, you can, but there's consequences.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if it's just you have a much lower quality life.
Yeah.
You know, I'm always a big advocate. I think anytime you try to suppress anything, your quality of life goes down.
For sure.
And you're unhappy. And also your sense of self and self-esteem can never be as high as it would be if you didn't suppress that stuff.
Yeah.
It's impossible. You can't be confident and suppress whole parts of yourself.
Yeah.
It's anathema.
And, you know, people are walking around. I mean, even today I had a call where somebody was asking me, well, like, you know, I think I'm into smelly feet. Is that normal? And I think I'm into, you know, this, that, and the other. Is that normal? I'm like, yes, it's normal. Yes, it's normal. Yes, it's normal. Yes, it's normal. Like, it really is. Like, so if you think any of your kinks are abnormal, I mean, go talk to a professional because there's just doesn't exist.
Yeah. And kinks aren't unhealthy. That's an important thing to note too.
Right.
Yeah. It's an interesting, well, I really enjoyed this chat. I think I right at the end, we touched on like kink is therapy. And I feel like that's such a massive topic.
Yeah.
Not enough people are aware of, and I've only become aware of the last sort of couple of months, and I love as a concept. But look, thank you so much for coming and talking with me today.
You're welcome. I really enjoyed myself, and I hope that your listeners got something from it.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. And just so they know, where how can they reach you? So if they've heard you sort of be a bit coy and go, well, they can contact me. Some of them probably thought, yeah, I could contact her. How do they do that?
Yeah, well, my website is priestessava.com. That's A-V-A. It's about to be completely redone, so forgive the mess over there. But you can also find me on Twitter under that title, and at my Twitter will direct you to all of the portals you can find me on.
Lovely. Fantastic. Thank you again so much. And maybe let's have a chat another time about some of this kink as therapy. I think there's a whole rabbit hole there.
Would love to.
That's it for today's podcast. I hope you've enjoyed yourself. Don't forget to check us out at schoolofattraction.com. I highly recommend you check out my comprehensive and free dating personality test, which you can find by clicking personality test at the top of the page. Thanks again for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you in my next podcast.